We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to Seahawks Man to Man Podcast, powered by The Athletic. Shout out to the company. My name is Michael Sean Dugar. I'm here with my co-host, Christopher Kidd. Make sure you follow us both up on the tweet machine. You can follow me at Mike Dugar. That is M-I-K-E-D-U-G-A-R. If you didn't catch that, don't worry. I'm verified. So just look for the guy with the blue check. Chris, talk to him.
What is up, everybody? It's your boy, Christopher Kidd. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at CKIDD206, and that's CKID206.
All right, we're back at it with another midweek guest as the Seahawks prepare for their Week 12 matchup on Monday Night Football against the Philadelphia Eagles. To help us break it all down, we have from The Athletic Philadelphia, Bo Wolf. Bo, what up, man? How's it going?
Doing all right. What's going on with you guys?
We're doing all right. You all right, Chris?
Hanging in there, man.
Yeah, Yeah, we doing all right. We start every show when we have a guest gaining insight into, you know, the opposing team's social justice initiatives, because we'd be remiss if we just ignored that whole part of 2020 that basically consumed all of our lives. Yeah, so, I remember in, like, I think it was like September, the Eagles put out, you know, a really powerful video with a bunch of players giving strong messages, black and white players, and part of it was a call to action, like, we plan to use our platform and use our power to enact change. Just kind of, in what ways have you seen the Eagles do that?
Yeah, it's always hard to you know, get a sense of what they are doing beyond what they're saying, especially in a year when we don't get to spend time in the locker room and, you know, you only get to ask like one question on a Zoom. So, I get to ask like Jake Elliott, who's the kicker, like, what are you doing on the social justice committee? But it seems like they have done some stuff. And you know, the truth is this Eagles team, this locker room, has been one of the more, socially justice motivated locker rooms dating back to, you know, Malcolm Jenkins' time with the team. They didn't go to the White House when they won the Super Bowl. Jenkins obviously spent a lot of time on criminal justice reform in Philadelphia. But I would say that, Rodney McLeod has sort of taken a bigger mantle with Malcolm Jenkins gone, and they had a big get out the vote movement. I think there were something like 10 to 15 guys who went around on election day trying to, get people out to vote. It's tough to say beyond that messaging what they have done. They have their own social justice committee, which is comprised of about 10 to 15 guys. McLeod takes the lead on that. Jeffrey Lurie is actually involved in that, the owner. And then there's a bunch of other players, and they talked a lot about in the summer, what are they going to do for the anthem, and they decided they were all going to do something in solidarity. And that week one thing, that week one game, it was actually interesting. They went to the football team players and said they wanted to do something where everybody on the field took a knee before the opening kickoff, and Washington was like, nah, we're good, we're not going to do that. So they instead, you know, a bunch of guys did that on their own on the sideline during the anthem. But the one thing that might be a little bit different about the Eagles than most teams, I think, is, I mean, we're talking about an extremely low bar here, but the Eagles owner, Jeffrey Lurie, has always been a little bit more committed to social justice than most owners in the NFL. They've done a lot of stuff in the community, I think he's one of, like, you know, two or three guys who are, giving money to Democratic candidates instead of Republican candidates throughout the political campaign process. And so he has had the back of guys like Malcolm Jenkins for a while. But again, we're talking about as low a bar as it gets for NFL owners, right?
Yeah. No, I'm glad you mentioned that. The bar is very, very low, but it's definitely worth noting for sure. It's weird. I came across one of Malcolm Jenkins' locker room sessions. I don't know what year it's from. I'm sure you were there. It's the one where you guys are asking him questions, and he just keeps putting up the poster that says, "You aren't listening."
That was right after. That was right when it was announced that they were not going to go to the White House to go to visit Donald Trump's White House after they won the Super Bowl. So it was the spring of 2018. He said, "You aren't listening. This is not about Trump. This is about our message and criminal justice reform." And, you know, he had all of these relevant, important statistics about, the inequity of criminal justice for black and brown people as opposed to white people. And I think he would say that that message probably still didn't get across as much as he would like to, but it was sort of a powerful day in the locker room.
And I know Malcolm isn't on the team anymore, but it, like you mentioned him earlier, it does sound like his voice and his actions definitely had an impact there. What impact do you think they had on the franchise?
I don't think there's any question about it. It was really great to get to cover him for a few years because he sort of laid waste to the notion that, like, in order to be a good football player, you have to be single-minded and only care about football, and that's your whole job. This guy, I don't know how he, I wrote about this once. He was our man of the year in Philadelphia in 2018. But, like, how does he have the time during the season, to be, a loving father to two young kids and a husband? And this guy plays like every snap of every game. He say he goes as hard as anybody in practice, and all the while he's taking meetings with the Philadelphia DA during the week. He's doing ride-alongs with police and meeting with other community organizers and doing all these different things. So it's crazy, and I do think that his impact has really been felt in the locker room for the guys who are still there. Now, that's not to downgrade a guy like Rodney McLeod and say that he wouldn't be involved in these things anyway, but I don't think there's any question that Malcolm Jenkins' legacy on that front is still being felt in the locker room.
We're going to pivot here to someone who is still on the team. One of my favorite people to kind of talk about because there's no middle ground with this guy here. It's very similar to, I think, how Bucks fans felt about Jameis last year. It was just like, we're either all in or we're all the way out. And that's Carson Wentz, quarterback of the Eagles. This is my favorite question to ask. I don't know if I've asked you before, but let's dive right into it. Bo, is Carson Wentz good?
Oh, man. I mean, you asked me before the season, and I would have said absolutely. He's like, the back end of a top 10 quarterback, maybe somewhere between like 8 and 12 and 13. But, I mean, listen, ever since Jadeveon Clowney speared him in the helmet in that playoff game last year, he's been terrible. He's been probably the worst quarterback in the league this year, worst or second worst if you're just looking at guys who have, started, the majority of their team's games. He's been really, really bad. He turns the ball over more than anybody else. He's got more negative plays than anybody else. He's missing guys. He does not look comfortable in the pocket. Now, there are a million excuses you can make. Like the offensive line, they've played 10 games this season, and it's been 9 different starting offensive lines in those 10 games. They've been missing a bunch of dudes. Their roster construction has been really bad. They've sort of not given him enough weapons for the past 2 or 3 seasons. The offensive scheme is pretty vanilla and uninspiring, but all those things aside, he has been really bad. And it is the question that the Eagles have to answer. Now, he has this huge contract, and there's really no getting out of it until the end of the 2021 season. So, I mean, they're wedded to him for at least another year. That doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be the starter that whole time, but I've never seen anything like it where a guy has been really good and just, gone back so much, regressed so much. It's crazy. And I don't know how to explain it. And I don't know if you can expect that he's ever going to be back to the guy that he was before.
You know, I'm sure all you guys in Philly are talking about, you know, what you just alluded to, how he fell from a guy who was probably going to win MVP in 2017 to being the worst starting quarterback in the league this year. I know Shil Kapadia, shout out to Shil, did a great deep dive into just what the hell happened to Carson. I know, what is your theory on how he did fall from that height that he was on in 2017?
So, I mean, I don't have a great theory, but my sense is that it is sort of a combination of all those factors. I mean, after 2017, they did not really give him any help weapons-wise. You know, the guys they brought in were an old DeSean Jackson who got hurt after one game. You know, they brought in Mike Wallace who got hurt after one game the year before. The wide receiver situation has been really bad ever since the Super Bowl. You know, they drafted Jalen Reagor in the first round this year, and he's been fine. And they sort of got extremely lucky with Travis Fulgham, but they didn't invest enough resources at that position. The offensive line has been bad this year, and I think that, you know, that has sort of made him not as comfortable in the pocket as he used to be. And, you know, there's other stuff that I just, you know, I don't know. Like, is it mentally sending a bad message to your quarterback when you draft another quarterback in the second round? You know, this is a guy who has dealt with his entire Eagles career. You know, his backup comes in and wins the Super Bowl. His backup comes in a year later and leads the team to a playoff win. He's dealt with all these injuries. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if his body is broken from all these injuries, if he is mentally exhausted from having gone through all this stuff. But it's a question that I don't know has an answer, and I don't know what the Eagles' answer is going to be moving forward.
Speaking of backup quarterbacks, you guys have a gym, I think, sitting on the bench, and Peterson has made it clear that he thinks you're sending the wrong message to your football team that the season is over. From that standpoint, I'm guessing Jalen's not going to get to play at all this season, no matter how bad it may get.
Well, I don't know about that, because I think you know, football guys, the one thing they say is, like, you have to be publicly 100% behind your quarterback until you're not. And I don't agree with Peterson that you're sending the wrong message if you go to Jalen Hurts at this point. And I don't know why we have to treat these guys with kid gloves. Like, Carson Wentz is an adult. Mm. He knows he's doing a bad job. He should, you know, what kind of message are you sending to the rest of the locker room if this guy's allowed to be so bad, one of the worst players at his position in the league, and he doesn't get replaced? And I don't think that means that once you go to Jalen Hurts, if Jalen Hurts isn't great, you can't go back to Carson Wentz. I think that's fine. And it's also important, you know, this Eagles team, you know, obviously is very bad. And if they don't win the NFC East, which I don't think they're going to, then they're going to have a top 10 pick. And they owe it to themselves to try to find out what they have in Jalen Hurts, because they need to know if they need to be looking at quarterbacks in the draft. So I think if things go bad over the next month or so, which, you know, their next four-game stretch is Seahawks, Saints, Packers, Cardinals.
Oof.
So you're probably looking at 3-10-1 four games from now. I think if it gets to that point and they are no longer in the race in the NFC East, which, you know, even if 3-10-1 they still might be, I think you'll have to see Jalen Hurts, because they need to know what they have in the guy.
Wow, that is unfortunate. And you already hinted at it. It's clear the Eagles should win the NFC East, and you're saying you don't even see that happening. What has been one, I mean, you just mentioned the next 4 weeks. I guess that plays a big part in it. I guess I don't even need to ask that question. You just gave us those four games, and that just sets it apart right there. I'll move on. What is up with this Eagles team? Is it injuries? Is it the fact that Carson Wentz is pretty much stinking up the joint? What would you say is the focal point for why this season is going the way it is going? Because I read a piece that you put out way back in, I want to say, September, and you said they'd probably, I think you mentioned that they'll get under 10 wins, or over 10 wins, I think it was, excuse me, and they have not achieved that goal.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Oh yeah, I mean they've been bad in every way. It's the players, it's the coaching, and it's the roster construction. And if you're asking me to put it on one thing, I would probably say it's on the roster construction. I mean, this is a team that is one of the oldest in the league and one of the most expensive. Mm. So they're old, expensive, and mediocre or sub-mediocre. I think that's probably number one. But that doesn't, leave Carson Wentz or the rest of the offense or this defense that, can't defend misdirection to save its life or the coaching staff off the hook. All those guys are complicit. The offense, in terms of ingenuity and being interesting, has backslid for the past three seasons. Right now they're just sending guys out in isolation routes. Nothing complements each other. There's no structure to the offense. Guys aren't running wide open, so it's not necessarily Carson Wentz is missing wide open guys, but he's also still been bad. What is the number one reason? It's hard to say, but all I know is they are in bad shape. The cap is going to be right up against it next year. They are in bad shape now and moving forward.
What's going on with my guy DeSean Jackson, a speedster in the league? He can't stay healthy. Is it just injuries with this guy? I mean, the last time he played was Week 7 against the Giants, and he only had 5 targets, 3 catches for 34 yards, and that's the last time we've seen him.
Yeah, I mean, his body's broken down, and that's another roster construction thing. As a player, DeSean is awesome. I think he's the best deep threat of this generation. It was worth taking a shot on, but he's played, 2 total complete games over the past 2 seasons. Week 1 last year against Washington, he was awesome. He had 2 long touchdown catches, over 150 yards, and that was it. That was all they got last year, and this year he played all of Week 1 again, got hurt Week 2, came back, got hurt again. This is a 32, 33-year-old guy whose game is built on game-breaking speed, and if he loses just a little bit of that, he's no longer the same player, and his body, this is a tough game, right? His body, I think, is just breaking down.
Yeah, he's about to be 34. His birthday is December 1st. Wow.
There you go.
I want to get into the receivers.
Still could just dust us all in a race, though.
Yeah, on one leg, he'd probably beat all of us on
his hands.
I want to get into the receivers a little bit here because I went through. I kind of knew who the leading receivers were on the Eagles this year, but I was like, for fun, let's check. Let's go look. I was like, who? I got 3 names in. I was like, who the hell is Carson Wentz throwing to? But Bo, I have a theory here. I think there's something that happened in the state of Pennsylvania. There's some unwritten agreement that only one team is allowed to have good receivers, right? Can't be the Steelers and the Eagles. Only one. And the Steelers
That's
have
not good for the Eagles because it's always the Steelers. Yeah, they get receivers better than anybody.
Yeah, the Steelers have 4 dudes right now who are legit nasty. And so, I think maybe you can let Doug Peterson know it's not just the front office's fault. They're legitimately cursed by some Pennsylvania rule that only one team in the NFL in that state can have receivers.
That might be right. So their receivers, they've got this guy, Travis Fulgham, who was a 6th-round pick of the Lions last year, didn't have any catches, was only active for a couple games. The Lions cut him before training camp even started. Then he goes to Green Bay for a week. They cut him. Then the Eagles sign him, and he's on the practice squad for the first couple weeks. He comes up, scores the game-winning touchdown in Week 3 against the 49ers. And then the 4 games after that, Weeks 4 through 7, I guess, he was the leading receiver in the NFL. So a 4-game stretch where he was the best receiver in the NFL. And since then, the last 2 games, he has been sort of not targeted a ton. And it's been, I think, 2 total catches. I believe in Travis Fulgham. I think he's, I think he is their best receiver. He's sort of a big-bodied, not huge, 6'2", possession guy, but he's got some deep speed too. Jalen Reagor is the guy they took in the first round, and I think Eagles fans will remind you that they took him over Justin Jefferson. So that is recreating some, not quite to the same extent, but a little bit of the same lament that they had when taking J.J. Arcega-Whiteside over D.K. Metcalf. That has not worked out very well. Arcega-Whiteside was a healthy scratch last week. So Metcalf is like the best dude in the NFL, and the Eagles took a guy before him who's probably going to get cut this offseason. So that tells you how the roster construction is going at wide receiver. The Eagles have struggled to identify and scout wide receivers well, and it is a real, real problem.
See, so that's what made me think of the curse thing today, or some like handshake with the devil that Mike Tomlin made over there, because it's the pain. It's the pain of taking JJ, what was that, 7 picks before DK, and then taking Jalen. How many picks was Jalen before Justin Jefferson?
1 pick before.
Oh, my God. One pick.
But, I mean, Jefferson was a, like, consensus higher-rated guy. So the Eagles went out on a limb to take Reagor first. It's not like it was DK and you were talking yourself into, you know, the injury question, is his neck going to be okay? This is like the Eagles, you know, with hubris, we're like, we think we know better than league think. We're taking Reagor over Jefferson. And that's not to say that Reagor can't be a good player. He's been fine. I think he'll be a good player, certainly better than Arcega-Whiteside. But, you know, it's not like the Eagles had earned the equity to think that they identify receivers better than anybody else.
Why weren't the Eagles more active at the deadline, going after, you know, like Fuller seemed like to be on the market in like Houston, for example? Why do you think they weren't more active in trying to help Carson out?
Well, I mean, they shouldn't really be in the business of forfeiting future assets for, you know, this team that's so bad, I would say. Maybe it's a question that they could have addressed in the offseason too. Like, we were kicking and screaming that they didn't add a veteran receiver before the draft to give them a little bit of flexibility during the draft. You know, a guy like, you know, Rashad Perryman, or, you know, they turned down opportunities to trade for DeAndre Hopkins and Stephon Diggs. So again, working out very well Eagles on the receiver front. Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God, I didn't even know that.
I think, you know, that's what Carson Wentz is probably broken mentally, because he's like, he's hearing we're not going to trade for DeAndre Hopkins, but instead the only offensive thing you're going to do is draft my backup in the second round. What am I doing?
Yeah. Wow. With all that in mind, is the front office under some fire over there? My goodness.
It is. Everybody's under fire. You know, I think it's possible. And you talk about a deal with the devil. Like, maybe that's the deal. Maybe it's Howie Roseman. You know, had to sit down with the devil, and he said, I want to be the guy who delivers the Eagles their first Super Bowl in history. And the devil's thinking, okay, but every move you make after that's going to go wrong. Joke's on you. So we'll see what happens. He's under fire. Doug Peterson's under fire. I don't think anything's off the table this offseason, except for probably Carson Wentz going anywhere just because of his contract.
You know, one move I did like, Chris, I don't know if you were a fan as well, is the acquisition of Darius Slay. I did like that. How's Slay looked in 2020?
So Slay's been good, and I was actually a little bit skeptical of the Slay move, not because of Slay himself, but because it's sort of they were approaching it like, this guy's going to fix our secondary, and, you know, you give up a third and a fifth and a new contract to a guy who's, you know, 29 years old right now. And he's been better than I expected. He's been really, really good. But the problem is, he hasn't solved the secondary at all. They're worse as a secondary. you know, he's taken away the opposing number one receiver, and opposing quarterbacks and offensive coordinators are like, fine, we'll throw to the other guys because your other guys stink. So, like, Avante Maddox, who should be a nickel or a free safety, is playing as a starting outside cornerback. And he's been dusted most of the year. You know, the Eagles were like bragging to everybody that they got this steal in Nickel Robey Coleman as their nickel. He's been bad. They lost Malcolm Jenkins, replaced him with Jalen Mills, who, you know, was their former starting cornerback. He's been bad. Roddy McLeod's been pretty good. But, you know, the secondary as a whole has not been good. And, you know, Darius Slay didn't fix it all. So I question the resources, but Slay himself has been pretty good.
So at 6 feet and 190 pounds, will he see a lot of DK Metcalf, who is 6'4", 220? Do you see that matchup happening?
I think he will probably follow
Lockett?
DK Metcalf across the field. Yeah,
wow.
I think so.
Wow. Okay. Well, this is going to be exciting. He's going to get to go up against this second-year guy who has been pretty much dominating this season outside of a few games. How do you feel the offense will attack the Seahawks defense, given that the Seahawks are trying to, I think they might have found where they're going with things defensively. Carlos Dunlap seems to have found his groove. Jamal Adams, they're starting to get a groove. How do you think the Eagles will attempt to attack this defense?
Well, probably not very well. there's just not a lot of creativity on the offense right now. I think what they will try to do is play 12 personnel and have Dallas Goedert, and I think Zach Ertz, there's a good chance he comes back for this game. And so they'll probably lean on their 12 personnel. It'll be those two guys with Travis Fulgham and Jalen Reagor on the outside for most of the game. But, you know, they've taken more shots deep this year than they have in years past, but it hasn't been super effective. They're completing fewer of those passes than almost anybody in the league. So I think you're going to see, you know, passes over the middle in tight coverage, like 8 yards down the field. That's pretty much been the bog offense that the Eagles have had for a while. You know, in there, when things are going well, they're using those tight ends to stretch the field vertically. Fulgham can beat guys one-on-one, and they're using Miles Sanders as a receiver out of the backfield. That has been, like, absent from the offense for the past few weeks. So I think Eagles fans would tell you they would have very little confidence of the Eagles doing anything creative against, you know, the league's worst defense, let alone a defense that seems to be improving like the Seahawks.
Chris, I tried to have faith with the Darius Slay question. See, I was like, oh, they got a good player. Let me just talk about him. And it's just like, nah, he ain't fixed nothing.
Yeah, like even the good players aren't making a difference.
And that's why I wanted to spin it back to the offense in hopes that there's like, you know, Chris, they can get this going, but
No.
Well, you're telling me, like, where are the holes in the Seahawks defense?
You know what? It seems like Shaquille is coming back. Maybe Trey Flowers, but if you don't have any faith in the wide receiving core, I don't know, man. That might be it.
Well, yeah. I mean, Trey
funny. I remember last year it was like, oh, they're going to throw at Trey Flowers, and then he had, like, the best game of his career. Right?
Yeah, just it doesn't work if the whole offense is not clicking.
Yeah.
You know, but one thing I wish I could have asked John this when we had the Cowboys preview. But it still applies for the rest of the teams in the NFC East. I mean, it seems like every coach is understandably so, like, hey, you know, we can still win a division. I'm sure the Eagles are obviously shooting to win the division as well. But, I mean, even if an NFC East team gets in at 6 wins, right, and they host the Seahawks or the Bucks or something, like, in as the 5 seed, like, is it even really – did you accomplish anything, do you think, if this team gets in at 6 wins or 7 wins?
Well, I mean, they're not getting the 7 wins. I'll tell you that. I think 5-10-win wins the division if they get there. And otherwise, it might be 5 wins for whoever wins the division. But for the Eagles, that should not be an accomplishment. You know, they should be embarrassed about that. They're the one team in this division who has, an established starting quarterback and, you know, a head coach with pedigree, a team that has been together this core for a while. So, you know, they should not be proud. I think if the Cowboys, you know, rally with a backup quarterback, you know, that's something they can be proud about. Certainly a team like Washington or the Giants that has been so terrible the past couple of years, it's something that they can feel good about, you know, finding a way to get into the playoffs and then getting dusted in the first round. That's great. But for the Eagles, I think it would be, you know, almost more embarrassing to, you know, go 5-10-1. You drop in draft order from like 10th to 21st, and then you get, you know, you lose by 30 points in the playoffs. That's not good for anybody.
Yeah, that's a good point, because like all offseason, I was like previewing the whole season, really. I was kind of looking like, okay, the team, with pandemic, you cut the offseason short. That means the teams with the same quarterback, the same play caller, same coach are probably, you know, have a leg up. And I was like, oh, the NFC East, that's only Philly. Philly's the only team with some type of continuity. And it's just like, oh, nope, that didn't help.
And the craziest thing is like week 3, Doug Peterson's making excuses like we didn't have a full offseason. Dude, no one had a full offseason. You should be in position to take advantage of that. So, you know, it's been that kind of year.
Well, let's get you out on perhaps a positive note with an over and under. Have a little fun here. I'm going to go with I'll go DK Metcalf. How many yards? I think we'll say over or under.
800.
Oh, man. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. DK Metcalf receiving yards against the Eagles defense. Over under at 115.5. Are you taking the over or under?
Ooh, that's a good one. I'm going to take the under, under the pretense that Slay will do a pretty good job. But the flip side is that, like, there's no line you could give me for Tyler Lockett that I'm going to go under on. Like, he might be the one to top 200.
Yeah, the first Arizona game was so instructive in that way. It was like, yeah, we'll just shut down DK. And Tyler's like, well, hold my beer. let me do this. I'm going to go with a fun Carson Wentz themed over and under here. How many over under turnovers for Carson Wentz?
Oh,
let's go with fumbles and interceptions. Let's go with
1.5.
No, I'll go 2.5.
What? Two.
I was gonna say 1.5 is the line.
Okay, you want to go 1.5? We can go 1.5.
I think 1.5 is good. I don't know. I feel like I'll take the under. I'll take the under because it's a little bit less embarrassing. But it's bad. I mean, he's got the highest percentage of negative plays in the league. He's got the most turnovers in the league. It's pretty ugly. So, you know, maybe he's so bad in the first half that they put in Jalen Hurts and he hits the under that way.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, we'll get you out real quick before we do the prediction, Bo. I was actually thinking that looking at, like, the primetime aspect of this game, like it's Monday night. It depends. Maybe if all the other teams in the NFC East lose, like, it becomes obviously a bigger game on Monday. They'll know the results.
Two of them play each other on Thanksgiving, so that's like the idea. Doug Peterson has been saying, like, for the past 4 weeks, we're still in first place. Well, now it's guaranteed come Sunday that they will not, or come Monday that they will not be in first place anymore. So thankfully, we can be over with that part.
Do you think if a really bad, like a stinker from Carson, like ultimate stinker, puts just pressure on, you know, Doug to maybe look at Jalen a little bit, like, hey, man, it might be your time. We just got embarrassed on Monday night.
I think so. And, the question that we can't really answer is, does Doug Peterson have the autonomy to make that decision himself?
Good question.
Because it's such a franchise-shifting thing. You know, does he need Jeffrey Lurie or Howie Roseman to be the one to, you know, ultimately sign off on that? Because it changes, you know, the structure of the entire organization. Now, I think that probably overstates things. Like, you know, at any other position, if a guy is terrible and you bench him, he can still come back the next week. Maybe it's not like that a quarterback, but the way that I've thought about it and said it is, you know, you drafted this guy in the second round as an insurance policy, not because you thought Carson Wentz was going to be terrible, but this is a guy who's gotten hurt before. You know the value of the backup quarterback position, so you value that highly. Well, you know, lots of crazy things can happen, and this happened. You have this insurance policy, and if you don't think that Jalen Hurts is good enough to be better than what Wentz has been giving you, then he wasn't worth a second-round pick. So, I think eventually, if Wentz keeps playing like this, they have to make the move.
Yeah, I mean, let Brian Flores take the wheel. Like, he'll bench Tua, then bring Fitz, and bench Fitz, and
exactly.
Bring Tua. You know, like, hey.
Tua's not crying. Like,
no, yeah, I mean, I think.
Was Ryan Fitzpatrick crying? Like, you know, it's fine. These are grown men.
Yeah, no, that's true. He's got the beard to prove it down there. Fitz does. All right, Bo, we'll get you out of here on a prediction. I think the Seahawks, Chris showed me the Seahawks are favored by 5. Was that, Chris?
Yeah, minus 5.
I could not believe it was just 5 points.
It might change. It's Tuesday. It'll shift.
I might throw some money. Actually, no, I can't. Never mind. I never said that. All right, Bo, what you got? Give us a winner and a score.
I will take the Seahawks 34-17.
34-17, a blow.
Biggest Seahawks win this season for them. All right.
Yeah, no, that would be a 17-point win on Monday night. That would do a lot. Thank you, Bo, so much for joining us on the Seahawks Man to Man podcast. You guys, please go check out Bo's work, man. Between Bo and Shield, man, I love reading about the Eagles, even if I don't give a damn. Mostly I just read about Carson Wentz because it's just a train wreck. But – man, Bo does great work. Has done some of my favorite, like, creative stories. I think we shouted out Bo last time when he was outside the Rams stadium while the game was going on.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
You were on the concourse, right? Like checking out all the jerseys or something like that.
That's right. That's
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And then
terrible press box. I couldn't handle it, so I did something else instead.
Yeah. See, I love stuff like that. Yeah. The quarterback kind of quiz with Josh McCown that Russell Wilson turned down when I pitched the same idea to him. I'm not bitter.
Well, you did a story that I've been like trying to do for a while. You pulled it together watching a game with a former player. That was awesome.
Yeah, no, you know what you should do? You should watch the game with Carson Wentz's agent. and just watch how many shots of whiskey he pours every sack.
Yeah, how many things he's breaking.
Oh man, but anyway, that's Bo Wolf, man. Covers the Eagles, man. Thank you so much. Thank you guys for tuning in to the Seahawks Man to Man podcast. We'll catch you guys after the Monday Nighter. We're out. Maybe you should smoke some. Tried the marijuana. I was never good. The vibe was straight. Shows you a couple of things.